Good morning and welcome to the Tuesday edition of Down to Brass Tacks. Today is the seventh day of the 7 months and the year 2020, and it's good to be with you this morning. We look forward, or I should say I look forward to our conversations. We're back on our regular day Tuesday, so hopefully we will have an interesting and fulfilling one today. As is the custom, I give you a few prefatory remarks. And let me just start out by saying that this is the month of July, and certainly during June, it is normally identified as Pride Month. And to those of you who are not familiar with the concept, it's a month which has been, one could say, captured by the LGBTQI2 community, in which they encourage, or we encourage, persons to celebrate the pride that we share in being the people that we are. And certainly the rainbow flag has become synonymous with that. I'm not sure how the month of June has been identified. My understanding is that it goes back to some riots in an area of New York many years ago that happened during June, where the police raided a nightclub. And as a result of that, the protesters came to the streets to demand their rights. As a result, June has become associated with those riots. And certainly across the world, it has captured the imagination of persons. So I want to say, take this opportunity, since I haven't had the opportunity during June, honestly, I think I've forgotten, to say happy Pride to all of you in the LGBTQ community, and also to say happy Pride to all of you in Barbados, because diversity is something that benefits all of us. We all should be able to celebrate who we are, what we are. So from that perspective, I say happy Pride. I also want to spend a bit of time this morning speaking about the situation with the former Minister of Agriculture, Mr. Wood, and his recent attack on Mr. Indarwe, and then secondly on the Barbados Labour Party. And as I've said in the press, Mr. Wood has an awesome task on his hands. To attack a government that has the amount of political capital that this government has is going to be a tall order. And I felt that his initial attack on Indarwe was perhaps more wise. I'm not sure what is the expected achievement of Mr. Anthony Wood. The idea of getting the Member of Parliament recalled after 2 years is quite low, since there's no facility for that to happen. So my understanding, or my expectation, is that it's really just about causing. Probably should have done it closer to an election. The fact is that by the time 2023 rolls around, especially with all of this COVID stuff going on and so on, I hardly think anyone will remember who Anthony Wood is or the relevance that he has. I don't know whether he's thinking of a political comeback or a career with one of the other political parties, but again, the significance would be reduced. I do feel, though, that we have to acknowledge that Anthony Wood was a member of parliament. He was a minister of government. He prevailed in St. Philip, and any person from the Barbados Labour Party who prevails in St. Philip needs to be taken seriously, because in the final analysis, St. Philip has always been very hostile to the Barbados Labour Party. So he certainly should be given credit where that is concerned. I am a fan of Mr. Wood's intellect, and I think that that also has to be acknowledged. As an economist, he has an outstanding intellect, and I certainly think that he would have made a contribution in that regard. So those are the points that we need to make regarding Mr. Wood. The challenge, however, is that if we take that over to the point where we argue that he is responsible for Mr. Weir's being in office, I have some challenges where that is concerned. Or if we suggest that he can do serious damage to the Barbados Labour Party, I have even greater difficulty where that's concerned. I have not heard the Prime Minister on that matter, and I believe that there's good reasons why I haven't heard her on that matter. Either she doesn't believe it is a matter that requires a response at this stage, or alternatively, she has a plan to respond later. So suffice to say, I think that that matter can more or less stay where it is, and I don't really see there's a need for a lot of conversation, further conversation where that is concerned. The next issue is LIAT. A vexed issue of LIAT, and I think that people are ready to pigeonhole. So the Prime Minister of Antigua and Barbuda seems to want to be pigeonholed as the major savior of LIAT, the person who wants to save LIAT, whether alone or unilaterally, he is a champion of LIAT. And I get the impression that there's also an attempt to pigeonhole Prime Minister Motley in a group that does not, along with Prime Minister Gonzalez, that are suggesting that we should have a new airline taking over. I made some comments in the press suggesting that I did not see either of these airlines that were being touted as being the solution to regional air travel. Which is not to say that I have a difficulty with the idea of One Caribbean filling a breach that may be created. I think the point I was trying to make is that if you are looking at what LIA represented regionally and the role it played regionally, the likelihood of One Caribbean taking over that role overnight was quite low, and I didn't see it in that regard. I always felt it would be more a stopgap type of mechanism. But the point is that I think that there's room for both. There's room for the perspective offered by Prime Minister Brown, and I think there's also more room for the perspective thus far that has been offered by Prime Minister Motley and Prime Minister Gonzalez. The one issue that I believe I can entrench myself on is that I do believe that we need to hear from Prime Minister Chastanet, Prime Minister Mitchell, Prime Minister Harris. I think that those are the prime ministers that we need to hear from, because I do feel that one of the unfortunate realities of LIAT of past was the fact that it did not have any kind of financial intervention from those leaders. We're hearing from the others because the others have a stake in LIAT, and of course would have to have some conversation where that is concerned. But I think that we need to hear from the others regarding their vision. And if there is one thing I would say I am willing to entrench myself on, is a position that says anything that we do going forward needs to have the support of all of the region's heads. And that to me is one thing that is clear. I am confused somewhat by Prime Minister Brown's position, to the extent that I was of the opinion when he came out first and said that the airline will be liquidated, that this was what he thought was the best thing to do. I am now getting a sense that he is uncomfortable with that because he is being framed as a person who is fighting to save LIAT. So I am challenged in understanding where his position is, and I believe that we perhaps need to wait on him to say what exactly is his view regarding the whole thing. How is it that it appeared as though initially that he was anxious to liquidate, and now it appears as though he is less anxious to liquidate and he wants to save the airline? I don't believe that Prime Minister Motley has spoken to the issue. She made a comment on the radio regarding regional air travel, but to me, that comment is not a final statement regarding her position on LIAT. As you would know, Barbados has considerable financial interest in LIAT. Barbados has a loan guarantee with the Caribbean Development Bank regarding one of the assets or two of the assets that LIAT has. And for those reasons, I believe Barbados will want to have a more fulsome conversation regarding what is happening. Dr. Gonzalez, of course, also would need to have a conversation about what is happening. He's responsible for air transportation regionally. The challenge is that the way for that conversation to take place is perhaps around the meeting table, the boardroom, or indeed even at CARICOM, Special CARICOM Heads of Government Conference that could be convened under the leadership of Prime Minister Gonzalez. But I don't think the way for that conversation to take place is for us to have private press briefings that are being broadcast around the region, expressing the views of one leader versus the other and suggesting that there's some kind of a fight or a tussle. That was what brought down the Federation. And I think that the idea that we would hear Prime Minister Brown's position articulated on his radio station in Antigua versus Prime Minister Motley's position articulated on a conversation that she was having with some ladies in Grenada versus Prime Minister Gonzalez's position that was articulated on the Unity radio station in St. Vincent and the Grenadines, that to me does not make sense, because these leaders have to have the capacity to speak to one another, to come to a common position, or indeed if there is no position to which they can agree, make that known to the public in that kind of forum. So if I were to entrench myself, I do feel all of the leaders need to get involved. I do think that we need to hear from the leaders who are not participation shareholders. But more importantly, I believe that the idea of a conversation is long overdue. And I do believe that the leaders need to have such a conversation and should perhaps communicate with us after having done so. So that's me. Down to brass tacks, 434-1790. Remember, we are here until 2 p.m. John Stolt is the producer this morning. So we're going to have a conversation about whatever is on your mind. Down to brass tacks. Good Morning.
Good morning, Pete.
Morning, sir. How are you doing? Good to hear you.
Not too bad. Yeah. You're going to be on next week?
Actually, no. I am not likely to be on for the next couple of months. So
you wouldn't say that early?
Well, anyhow, I was planning to say at the end, but since you prompted me, I don't know whether there's some electronic facility which we used, if that might facilitate a conversation. Yeah. If that does, then I will be here. If not, I will be here.
Let me send good wishes to you on your travel. Mm-hmm. I don't know. You are still wearing here, or are you going to cut your hair?
I'm still wearing hair. I think the hair will remain until Nelson goes. How does that sound?
I don't know if your husband is going to accept you being here.
That is better still.
All right. You will have hair to put his fingers through.
The hair has been a hit within the family. Europeans, generally speaking, like to see black people with hair. It's ironic, huh?
Okay, all right. Your love will grow stronger then. All right. Let me get on. Well, you know, you and I always told you that you are a theoretical analyst and I am practical. You remember that my favorite term in politics. Now, I heard you say something just now pertaining to the issue in St. Philip, but this is not my real issue. I want to deal with the Employment Rights Tribunal, but let me push this out the way. Now, I was following politics for a very long time. The most comprehensive victory the Democratic Labour Party ever had was in 1971, apart from the 24-3.
The DLP, right.
Yeah, in 1971. Mm. And I could recall when they had the first by-election in St. Philip with Neville Maxwell. I recall Sir David Simmons ran in the 71 election. Mm. I was badly beaten by Neville Maxwell.
That's right.
I think he had only scored 700 in odd votes to Maxwell 2,000 and something. And the Lloyd Bradshaw against Randall Weeks, I think 500 or 600 votes. But to my surprise, within the by-election, Sir David turned around those votes in the by-election. And what happened, it wasn't against the party. The accusations was laid against the candidate, Neville Maxwell. Mm-hmm. And I remember very well.
This is the defamation thing?
Yes.
Right. I think he had flown a plane over or something, so distributed pamphlets.
No, not he. It was something to do with the editorial or something in the Democrat. Mm-hmm. Apart from other issues that came up.
No, he's supposed to have been a relative of mine, huh?
Okay.
Yeah.
It was a lot to do with accusations that was laid against him pertaining money and things from constituents. Mm-hmm. And Sir David turned around that vote in St. Philip to become, I would say, one of the first members to break the egg in St. Philip as a BLP candidate. So when you made mention just now about the, you don't think that Mr. Woody would be making any impact. Never, ever, and I keep telling you this, you win election over accusations. And if the people accept the accusations, it is obvious that that candidate will suffer. So you will have to wait to hear what Mr. Wood have to say. I would not predict anything. I'm not getting into the politics. As I said, I am judging things as I see them.
Do you feel that he can?
Pardon?
Do you feel like he can have an impact?
Well, I read the paper yesterday. And I saw a shopkeeper pull down a picture of Indarvey and Patrick Way and said she didn't want to hand out sincerely. But I'm not getting into it.
You thought of that act and the fact that it was recorded on film? Do you think it was convenient that just at that point in time, the photographer just happened to be there when she was pulling down the picture?
I don't know. If it was organized, it was well organized, and you cannot organize something unless you have players. Mm. Somebody got to be in there, and I think both of them will have to listen to the constituents, and the constituency will decide what they want. But let me leave that as it is. Sorry. When you come back, I may be able to find information, but I don't judge elections out here. Okay. I don't judge elections that way.
Now, we agree though that St. Philip is hostile territory for the Barbados Labour Party.
Oh, yes. Yeah,
right.
I said
that. That we can agree on, right? It's hostile.
I said that every time. I said David Simmons did a tremendous job after Simmons. He won elections to turn it around. Mm-hmm. He did a tremendous job. But I think it was a lot to do with his personality. People voted at the time party, but when his personality came up in the game, he was able to make tremendous impact as a person. So don't forget that in politics, there's personalities and party. Don't ever think that the next election, don't mind the 30 that you won, but people who went out there with a decision, they spoke on because I was one who disliked the accusations that were being laid before the table or before the jury. Mm. And the jury spoke tremendously in favor of Mayor Martley. Okay. Now, we have to wait and see how the jury can perform after the verdict and the evidence comes out. Mm-hmm. Now, let me look at the tribunal. Now, I heard a lady yesterday spoke of her encounter with the tribunal. Now, I am a perfect example. Now, let me ask you a question. How long a lawyer did stay to study law?
It's 5 years.
5 years. Mm-hmm. Now, I went on a tribunal, employment rights tribunal, and this is the hurtful part of it. For 7 years, I'm not speaking in terms of the case took 7 years to hear. The case was heard, and I was journeying to the employment rights tribunal for 7 straight years.
Yeah.
Do you believe with any doubt of any human being that got a feeling for people? Why should a case, I believe this case should go in the Guinness Book of Records.
No, but they're the longest.
No, you may talk.
There are people who have been dealing with matters for over 10 years and they don't go along and the matter's still in dealt with.
But I'm talking about, you get it mixed up. I'm not dealing with hearing the matter.
Mm-hmm.
You could have
you mean
case.
Waiting for it to come up?
Yeah, you could clear it long before it comes out, and you could clear it long when the judgment is produced to get your money. I am talking about the trial. You ever hear about a trial that takes 7 years after it started? Huh? A lawyer takes 5 years to learn law. It takes 7 years to bring a verdict. You could believe that? Huh? I decided I can take it upon myself. And I can present my case before the Prime Minister. I heard her made mention pertaining to this, not this particular case, about the time you take to get a certificate of character. Now, when we have legal luminaries sitting down and playing away with the lives of people, and we keep talking about Black Lives Matters. Now, we have got no white judges, nor no white people sitting on these tribunals, you know.
They got away judges no more?
Nah.
That's true, yeah. All Black, yeah.
All Black. And you going tell me that Black people could sit down and treat Black people like this, and then you talk about Black Lives Matter? Now, let me ask you another question. I was listening very carefully to, I thought you would have bring it up, the audit report at Water Authority. Could you tell me?
I probably should have, yeah.
Could you tell me if whether or not the Auditor General explained to the public what was illegal? You know that both, mainly these statutory boards carry lawyers with a retaining fee. I would like to know who was the lawyer and the retaining fee of Water Authority.
But you know.
I would like to know that. Huh?
But you know.
I know.
Man, you know.
No,
you play that, you
know.
Ain't know. You know very well who it is.
I would like to know the sort of money that was paid to that.
But you know the amount of money associated with it. You know very well who it is, too.
Honest to God, I don't know.
Man, you know.
That one missed me.
What I think you wanted to say, though, is that you feel that the Auditor General ought to give you some path to prosecution.
Right.
That's what you wanted to suggest.
Because because I feel in my, now whenever these,
can you feel somebody should get locked up, right?
Whenever these fees are being charged, mm-hmm. you know what is hurtful? That the taxpayers got to pay these fees, you right. know?
The challenge, however, is that that's not the Auditor General's role, right? And I also am of the strong view that it's extremely difficult to attack someone for a fee charged. If I agree, and this is something that I remember hearing during the inquiry into the St. Joseph Hospital, if I agree to paint a wall for $50,000 and you agree to pay me $50,000 to paint a wall, indeed, if you agree to pay me $250,000 to paint a wall, and I agree that I will paint it for that, who is going to come and dispute the fact that that was a fair price for the work that was being done?
But that's what getting at. That's right. what getting at.
So the idea of saying that a legal fee is too high is as difficult as saying that a contractor's fee for painting the wall is too high.
But, all right.
It's what the two people agree to pay.
But
and
that's
what getting at. One can argue that the person who made the agreement to pay that fee has paid the ultimate price for so doing because that individual is no longer in office.
All right, the point that I'm getting at, if we do not have regulatory bodies to control, if you set up a regulatory body to control the fee paid to statutory lawyers or lawyers who have retained fee at this board, it's hurtful. Then we would hear that the government don't have the money. You can remember the issue with Barrett Building?
Mm-hmm.
You could recall how many lawyers come out as millionaires?
Man, yeah, they're not millionaires, but thousandaires maybe.
Man, no, yeah. People were paid a million this and a million that.
Because they were working on the project for about 10 years.
But that's what I'm trying to tell you now. And you know, at the end of the day, the buildings still don't belong to the government. Huh?
But that was part of the agreement that it should be ceded. I get what you're saying. Some time ago, I was told that there was guidance that could be conveyed regarding the schedule of fees that is, I think, is published by the Barbados Bar Association. I remember hearing one lawyer saying that that could be used as a guide. The challenge is that there's always an exception where you can say, under normal circumstances, I would charge you $50 to paint the wall. However, due to the complexity of this nature, I need to charge you $100. And that's really where the conversation takes place. So suffice to say, I understand where you're coming from and your concerns about the Auditor General's report. I don't think the Auditor General can give you a pass to prosecution. And indeed, if the offense is that the fees were too high, I don't believe that any prosecution could ever come out of it. And what we need to do is perhaps, as you're suggesting, have some kind of legislative schedule of fees for all types of services, not only legal services, but other consulting services that say that based on an hour's work, the range should be between X and X, depending on whether the complexity of the matter. All right, sir, but we're going to... Sorry, find a word from you, and then we're going to go. Go ahead.
Yeah. Now, I follow the Prime Minister to actually every meeting he has. Mm-hmm. I'm not one of those people who go around and clap when people talk. I try to listen and see if I could learn something. I recall there was a matter that she presented on the platform where this body charged this big set of money. And she said that in certain matter, a particular matter, I think where her family was involved, he did not even charge that sort of money. Mm-hmm. And that fee was, you would say, outrageous. Mm-hmm. I would like her to do two things for me. I can find time and I can get hold of her. Mm-hmm. To investigate why a case at the tribunal should take 7 years, going into eight.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to find out from her what is the situation pertaining to these legal fees between Water Authority and Andrews Factory. I know that's my pet subject.
Okay.
I want to know how lawyers could do these things to taxpayers, because in the end, had not for national insurance that was introduced by Arbar and Winter Crawford, this country would be suffering day by day.
Mm-hmm.
And people living high off the taxpayers using methods of what you consider statutory retaining legal fees. And I need that these fees be investigated, because poor people in this country suffering and other people getting fat off the taxpayers. Thank you, Peter.
Okay, take care. Thank you for calling. Donna Brassachs, 434-1790. I have an email from someone. Peter, years ago, in 1991, I traveled on Liat. I offered an island hopping fare. It was great. It enabled non-Caribbean residents to explore many islands in the Caribbean. I didn't think this was offered any longer. I think the demise of LIAT is a lack of marketing to foreigners. Ryanair is similar and well-known in Europe. Travel agents in Canada don't market LIAT. Not sure they even know about LIAT. What a shame, because one can see many islands in the Caribbean by traveling with LIAT. In order for any product to survive, you have to market it properly. With respect, I think it's a bit of an oversimplification. Ryanair has the advantage of a huge market, larger planes that allow them to charge far cheaper fares, and they can move thousands of people in a day, which helps them to bring down the overall cost. The challenge that LIAT has is that the market, whether we like it or not, is small. And even with the best of intentions, now we saw this from the RedJet model, that the low-cost approach is unlikely to work, even if well-marketed, simply because the market is not as elastic as some people may think. And it is also a relatively small market, all things considered. So, yeah, that's the thing. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Good morning. Good morning.
Good morning, Peter.
Hey, morning, sir. How are you doing?
Good to hear you. I'm pretty good. Now, Peter, I want to make two observations, but before I go to that, I want to say to you that David Simmons seat contest the St. Philip North seat rather than the St. Philip South seat that we're hearing this from your first caller. You remember that?
Yeah, but the point that I think both he and I were making is that the parish of St. Philip, full stop, the parish of St. Philip has always been a DLP stomping ground.
Right, that's exactly what we're going to
So it has emerged into the North, the South, and the West. But historically, it was the parish of St. Philip what was DLP territory.
Correct, that's exactly what I was going to tell you. Yeah. Because I recognize both in St. Philip North, as you said, and the South, was always a stronghold of the Democrat Labour Party. And I believe even the St. Anthony Wood, the last two elections before me that he contested, he lost all two times. And I simply believe it's the strength of Mayor Morley, Prime Minister Mayor Morley, that bring home the seat last election.
Bring home a lot of seats last election, the coattail effect.
Exactly. So I really believe she was very instrumental in bringing home the seat in St. Philip North. So I'm not surprised at what's happening now. Now, as I said, there's two observations, and I deliberately use the word observations because I listened to Glenn Murray, Peter. I don't know if you can recall that you first guy who called the program a couple of Mondays. Tuesday, saw you was on the program. Tuesday or Monday?
It was a Monday.
It was a Monday. Yeah. You know the guy you're speaking about?
I know the guy you're speaking about, yeah.
Right. And Glenn Murray began to pray. He came on and he praised the youngster for the contribution he made, which was quite good. But then he went further then and tell you that he believed he should be more youthful rather than coming with the party old mantra. This may refer to Barbados Labour Party or mantra. Now, I was most astonished when I heard Glenn Murray use those remarks, Peter. Because if you're going to tell me that the guys should be more youthful, and then when we get the same Glenn Murray, now that we have a more youthful government, youthful members as well in Parliament, and whenever they come with a policy, Glenn Murray is the same person who would come and tell you in his time, we used to do it this way. In other words, he's criticizing the young, youthful people for doing it their way or coming with a more dynamic program.
Well, I'm going to give you some good news. You will have the pleasure of Glenn Murray's company on Thursday of this week, I believe. And perhaps you can raise your concerns with him, to him.
Right.
At that point, I tell you.
Right, because I was concerned to know that he would come now, you know me.
It's just fine. I mean, so you can raise those concerns with him.
Right, so
And now we can speak about concerns that you may have with me.
Right, but I think he shouldn't come with that long line knowing that you got a youthful set of people who know is seeing it and doing it.
No problem, but then when he comes, you and him can battle it out.
Right, so I think he was out of place. Right. Now, my other observation, Peter, concerning the Trinidadian woman. I say you woman deliberately do. Now, she was speaking about the Ghana election. And Peter, I am more than amazed to know that all the silence she have this love for the Guyanese and the Guyanese, for the Guyanese people. Mm-hmm. When we know full well that she won, who Peter, not the Guyanese who come to Barbados left, right, and center.
Mm-hmm.
So much so that we had the impression, or he got the impression that she believed the only person that should be in Barbados with a foreign accent should be her. Exactly.
The Green Paper immigration reform. I remember those conversations. She was very, very supportive of the Green Paper, and the Green Paper was itself very hostile. I am more concerned, though. The Trinidadian lady will be the Trinidadian lady, and I am not prepared to. I would love for her to call and speak to me on some of these issues. She resolutely avoids doing so, and that is her right. But I noticed that she chooses her battles very carefully, and she doesn't want to pick one with me, which is fine. But suffice to say, I am more concerned now about advertisements I'm seeing in the newspaper that are designed to directly attack the role of the Caribbean Court of Justice and to attempt to draw a line between a pronouncement that the CCJ may make tomorrow and the feeling that Guyanese have to be independent and their sovereignty has to remain intact. And moreover, that the growth of the CCJ could be affected by that decision. I think it is clearly a preemptive strike, and in a sense, it is a veiled warning to the CCJ that they ought not to do something that the Guyana lawyers, the APNU lawyers, have been suggesting that they shouldn't do. I don't have a difficulty with a lawyer bringing an argument in the context of a court, but I find it offensive when a government sponsors advertisements in regional media to take a position to encourage a court to argue in a way that they want the court to argue. And the threat of the lack of growth of the CCJ or an attack on the sovereignty to construe a decision of the CCJ that you have not yet heard as an attack on the sovereignty or a potential attack on the sovereignty of Guyana is something that I find offensive. So I am worried with the Trinidadian lady. I am concerned that these guys have gone too far, in my opinion. They have become fanatical, and the extent to which the desperation that consumes them now becomes manifest is reflected in those advertisements that we are being seen. I saw an editorial in another section of the press that's not associated with this company, and I found it disturbing because it just sounds so propagandistic. And my question is, well, where's all of this information coming from? And then I realized that this is all part of a campaign that is being piloted by APNU. When the Caribbean Court of Justice sits as the final court of appeal in Guyana, it sits as a Guyanese court. When it sits as the final court of appeal in Barbados, it sits as a Barbadian court. And when it sits as the arbiter regarding matters within CARICOM, it sits as a CARICOM court. And I don't have a difficulty with that. So why is it that these guys are trying to suggest that for them to sit and construe that they have a role as the final court of appeal in Guyana is an attack on the sovereignty of Guyana? It's crazy, and it is disturbing, and I think that we should all be very concerned about the direction that this thing is going. Look, Barbados wasn't always treated well by the CCJ. Well, you remember the Shanique Myrie case? That's one of the first cases. And the justices had a lot to say about the poor behavior on the part of the government of Barbados. They suggested that the policemen were telling lies. I mean, it was some harsh language, and we took that because that is how it rules. Sometimes a court will be with you, sometimes it will be against you.
Right.
What exactly is the problem now? Yes, sir.
Yeah, but I only raise this point, as I told you, as an observation, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't want the Guyanese people to fall for this sort of pretty thought like getting this coming from her. Because, mm-hmm. Peter, to be quite honest with you, when she used these terms, okay, and giving people the people's story, this impression that she all support and she all concerned about what happened in Guyana, I think it's all about a statement that Prime Minister Marley made concerning the same elections, and she's trying to see how much support she can get up to go against Prime Minister Marley.
But we know,
that's her mantra. That's exactly what
we know what the Trinidadian lady is up to, so we know how to classify and to treat her comments in a certain context. And she's naked in that regard. So when we hear her voice, we know the position that she is going to take, and it's going to be a position that is always inconsistent with the leadership of this country. She will never support the prime minister of this country. And that's as simple as that. So even if she has to go through contusions that lead her into strange company, because one would have thought that, as you said, She would be the head one supporting regionalism, but I'm more regionalistic than she. You know, and it is naked and it is crass. It is unfortunate that she takes these positions, but that is, you know, we know how to deal with it when we hear it. I am convinced, though, sir, that the vast majority of people in Barbados kind of understand where this conversation is going. And they appreciate the genuine position that has been taken by the Prime Minister of Barbados, Prime Minister St. Vincent, and the others who've commented on the issue. Prime Minister Trinidad and Tobago also has something to say recently. Right? All right, sir, anything else from you today?
Because when they was even speaking about the population growth, and she know exactly what she was going on, that line concerning, you know what I mean? That's all about it. But as she always got the program since she come to educate people, I want to educate the Ghanaian people this morning. To ignore her, that is just a word.
Start again in the next few months. Good morning, Peter. Why all the fuss from the private sector agency? I'm an attorney at law and have never been retained by a member of the white Barbadian or Indian community in any type of matter, except in the area of criminal law where white attorneys do not practice. White people hardly engage the services of black attorneys. I was attached to the law chambers and noticed that when white clients came into chambers, they were generally directed or referred to the attorney or attorneys of a different color and not because of any particular skill. I cannot speak for all attorneys, but those who are honest and unafraid to speak the truth can have their say on the matter. White Barbadians and any other minority races quietly and effectively avoid supporting black enterprise. I know that we have raised voice on the issue. We are accused of creating division, even by some black Barbadians. I want to hear the white Barbadian community speak honestly to the issue. Well, I guess I'm one of those people that you are speaking indirectly to, because I was one of the people that said that this whole thing is foolishness. What I would ask you, sir, is perhaps you could tell me how many white attorneys we have in Barbados and how many black attorneys we have in Barbados. And I guarantee you that you're going to be in the 90-something percentile range regarding white to black ratio. When you are so dominant in terms of a profession, which is the same in accounting, the same in medicine, and so on, how can you be complaining about the fact that Barbadians are not supporting you? The fact that you are in business, by definition, means that the majority of Barbadians are supporting you, because the majority of people, or the majority of attorneys, are black. There was another comment I wanted to read here, which I thought was interesting. Someone was saying that, yeah, we have to remember that the Barbados Water Authority has internal counsel, and they're asking about why should they be charging those kinds of fees. And another one is saying that there's something called bread and fish lawyers. I didn't realize that there were bread and fish lawyers charging $100,000 per year. And as a taxpayer, she objects. And then there's another comment here that apparently the legal profession does have a schedule for non-contentious matters, and it was legislated in 1976. I, one would assume that this needs to be revised now, because 1976 fees can't be necessarily carried forward. No, I think that's also fair. Down to Brass Stocks, good morning.
Good morning to you, Mr. Vickham.
Morning, sir. How are you doing?
Doing wonderful. What about yourself?
Man, I'm good. I'm good. This is Patrick, right?
Yes, it is.
Good to hear you.
Good. Peter, well, I got a few things I want to discuss with you this morning, but the first thing I would say to you is this whole issue with Prime Minister Gaston Brown, right? I don't have a difficulty with Prime Minister Gaston Brown seeking to dance for supper in Antigua and Barbuda, right? But the challenge I'm having with his comments as it relates to this collision in the air and mortality rate can be higher, seeking to decimate the new players who the governments are willing looking at to either replace or after Leah is liquidated. I would like to find out from Mr. Brown on what basis he comes to such a conclusion, because those comments, Peter, I find to be reckless and irresponsible. And not only reckless and irresponsible, but also into question the judgment of air traffic controllers controlling the airspace of the Caribbean. You can't make such foolish pronouncements in your defense not to liquidate when he himself was the first one out the gates wanted Leah to be liquidated.
Did he want Leah to be liquidated, or was he saying that Leah will probably have to be liquidated?
That's what his sentiments was. And now all of a sudden, he changed route. So right now, going up on the bypass, now he going up Highway 1. I don't really understand, Mr. Brown, right? But I think that he must be more responsible in his comments. But obviously, he's speaking for the Antiguans, so that's where you got to behave the way that he's behaving. The next thing I want to suggest to you
something, though. I wonder whether part of Gaston Brown's position may very well be the fact that he feels hurt. When I saw the statement that he made last weekend about the situation he finds himself in, he clearly feels isolated and hurt by his colleagues. Now, when you and your wife have issues, you're married still, Patrick?
No, I never was married. Right. I wasn't so far.
Oh, you was never married?
No, I was so far.
When you and your children, mother had issues, right? Did you not always find that it was better to settle those issues in the house? And I always used to argue in the days when I was a Dem like you that one of the differences between the DLP and the BLP is that the Dems quarrel like people in a lower socioeconomic income group where you open the windows and you're abusing your quarrel because you want to create maximum embarrassment. That is not helpful. If it is one thing that I believe we can learn from rich people, is the fact that they argue that the Barbados Labour Party, they close the windows and they fight and shout at one another, but with the windows closed.
Precisely.
I think that is my challenge I am having now with Prime Minister Brown, that this should not be a situation in which we fight like working class people. Let's close the windows. Let's have a conversation at the round table. Let's decide on a position and let's go forward. I understand that he is hurt. But my thing is that if I hurt you as my partner, it is probably better for us to resolve that hurt and that pain in an environment that is private, as distinct from a public environment where we quarrel with one another in the village and holding up clothes and all of that kind of thing. Because to me, that is what it is coming to. The holding up of clothes is ultimately, I mean, this is where we're going with this conversation, and I don't
I can assure you that the silence of the Prime Minister is directly related to the conduct of Mr. Brown. She would not be shouting across.
I don't know. I am happy to see that if it is that the partner is quarreling, that she sees her role as one not to quarrel and fight, which is not a bad thing.
He had an opportunity and failed to show up at the Zoom meeting that related to the last meeting. So I think that
I don't know that was necessarily the forum.
I don't know.
Look, to me, something as important as Liat requires a special meeting of CARICOM that discusses that and only that. And especially now that we're using Zoom, you can scuttle together a special meeting in 24 hours. You know, because everybody home, nobody ain't going away. So scuttle together the meeting of CARICOM, have a special conversation about it, arrive at positions, and then make a statement to the public. I really don't like the fact that we are hearing snippets from Grenada Media, from Antigua Media, from St. Vincent Media, from Barbados Media. That's not the way for us to build a relationship.
No, I don't think so.
As they said, it's akin to partners fighting in the road and holding up one another close, or their own close, is the case.
My next thing I want to go to quickly, Peter. I realize that we had the government undertook to the representative of St. John town hall meeting on Sunday last, and some dissenting voices came to the fore. And I am puzzled at the level of hypocrisy that continue to take place in this country, you know. Because don't tell me that you were in a position, knew of a problem, because the challenges that the residents in St. John are having as it relates to dry docks ain't come about since 2018. That was a challenge that was ongoing through successive governments. What I want
since
to find
the
out
90s.
From... So what I want to find out from Andre Warren is what would have possessed him to put on a shirt and pants and go up there, stand in front of Mike, to make a case to the people of St. John, when he could have done so from the floor of the Senate, and have his counterparts, those persons who were in charge then, fix the problem or seek to fix or remedy the problem that the people of St. John were having.
You, Patrick, you know why?
But don't come to.
It wasn't politically expedient then. It's politically expedient now.
But Peter, no, that's why I call it hypocrisy. Mm-hmm. Because you can't, for the better part of 10 years, sit idly by, understood these things to be happening. Mm-hmm. People were paying bills. People were paying water bills for mm-hmm. water that they have not received. And that happened since 2018 when the Morley-led mm-hmm. administration come to office. So why would you go up there now to confuse the people in St. John, to give them a false impression that the Barrett's Liberty come to office and mm-hmm. is now withholding water from the people in mm-hmm. St. John, and that they have every right to keep noise and march and sign a petition? You can mother people to borrow that water, but with his son, basketball, somebody to sign here, put the sign here, put the signature here.
But he wasn't wearing a Broadway hat, he was wearing a peak cap.
In the hot sun, I had the opportunity on the floor of Parliament to address this problem, and the floor of the Senate to fix this problem. My next thing that I want with this.
Patrick, we have to take a break, but I just want to say with regard to the St. John issue, I feel the pain of people living up there. I mean, when you listen to some of those stories of people, it was hard to hear. It was hard to fathom, and I think that part of what the Democratic Labour Party is doing, they're trying to exploit a most unfortunate situation, and perhaps that's good politics. So I ain't giving them wrong for doing it. But what you can say is that the broader issue for me is the fact that people in St. John have not been able to take a bath and a shower for the last 3-4 months. That is not good enough. You're supposed to be able to wake up on the morning and have a shower. And I think it's hard when people have to go to work. Some of them work in fields where they have to do manual labor, and they can't prepare themselves properly for the day when the day comes because they don't have water. They can't wash the dishes. They can't wash the clothes, you know. It's hard. So I kind of understand the pain, and I feel that the Dems are practicing reasonable politics in that they are trying to exploit a crisis that they see. The thing will go nowhere, the petition, because ultimately the Prime Minister has already said it's priority 1, 2, and 3 for her. And I mean, if we know her well enough, we know that once it becomes a priority for her, it will be done. It will be delivered. Anyhow, Patrick, stick a pin. You can finish your comment. Yeah, Patrick, we got to wrap up quickly.
Right. I just want to deal with the reopening of our air seaport. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I was looking at is that I do not believe, as it relates to dealing with specifically to tourism, because you're getting some we got some people in this country who got a lot of temper in their hands and trying to create a lot of panic and unnecessary fear in this country. From the time the Prime Minister spoke about the reopening of the airports and so on, but I believe, Peter, that the hoteliers and owners of villas and so on that have made accommodation for visitors to our shores should not be waiting on the government to lead the way in relation to visitors coming to our shores. Let me explain what I mean when I say this. I believe that creative marketing strategies must be employed by these individuals in order, because they know who come to their hotels on a yearly basis and 2 months or whatever, right? And that create the environment, Peter, where you offer incentives once these persons and they must be encouraged to take the COVID-19 test from whatever destination they're coming from, and that once they pass the preliminary test and get the results and so on, when they land on our shores and arrive, that then you use the initiative, because you can use the platforms such as Airbnb and all the other social media, international platforms, to market your hotels in such a manner, in collaboration with the Ministry of Health protocols, right, to bring people back to the country rather than waiting for the government to say that this is what we can do for the hotels and that is what we can do. I believe the hotels should take charge, take the lead, Peter, in so doing. Right, and that those people, because if you encourage through the same Airbnb, you use the platform to do that, and this is you decide that a person coming for 14 days that is COVID-19 free and that has passed the preliminary results that on arrival, that the first 3 days of your stay at the hotel, it will be breakfast, or the first 3 nights will be free. What I'm saying, that we got to create some ways, Peter, in order to think, and that it does not have to be the government leading the charge. That's the point they're making.
Okay, all right. That sounds reasonable. Just so you know, Patrick, I've received about 2 or 3 WhatsApp messages from people saying that the water has been back on in St. John since Sunday. and the pressure has been quite high. I recall some time ago I had Minister Abrams on the program after a lady in St. John reached out to me. I had him on the program for a few hours, and he spoke about the issues. And the lady called me the next day and said, Peter, would you believe that the water came on this morning and has been off for the whole day? Let's be clear. I think the convenience is not a situation where the water authority has turned the water off and turns it back on selectively, which is what people seem to be thinking. I just think it coincidentally has to do with the falling of the rain. Because my understanding is that a period of hours after, it's 48 or whatever hours after the rain falls, then that water will make its way into the caption areas. And as a result, then you would have sufficient water for them to pump. And that's what happened when Minister Abrams came on the program. It was curious that a few nights before the rain had fallen, and then there was water for them to pump. But it had nothing to do with that. So I'm happy that St. John is getting water, and I acknowledge the number of comments from people that have said that they believe the Water Authority turned back on the water since the meeting. I am, however, sure that that is not the case. The water may very well be flowing now because there is water in the well to pump. And as Minister Abrams said when he came on the program, they don't wickedly turn off the pumps unless it's a situation where they have to be conscious about the level of water in the reservoir and not to overpump. Because if the pumps go dry, of course, it damages the pump, but that doesn't help anyone. Down to Brass Tacks, good afternoon. Good morning, sorry.
Good morning.
Yes, morning.
Yes, morning, sir. Mm-hmm. How are you?
I'm good, and yourself?
I'm all right. Yeah, I got a few things that you want to talk about. Mm-hmm. I'm a voter.
You are a voter?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'm offended. I'm offended by Mr. Wood's attempt to mama a circular. Right. Now he's coming with.
You're Bajan?
Of course.
So where does the word mama guy come from?
Somewhere like.
It's a Trini phrase. Hopefully, yeah, many people who are hearing you would understand what you mean, though.
Okay.
So you feel he mama guy in the people?
Yes, that's my belief. Mm. Right? No. Mr. Weir is, in my opinion, doing a good job. Not as simple, right? He supported Mr. Weir during elections, and he gave the impression to the voters that Mr. Weir is an excellent candidate, which I found that he is. Not only that, right? To come now and say that he's finished with the BLP leaves you to be confused. So that's why I say I'm a guy, right? Now, what is he really trying to achieve? He's not really said anything, but yet he's talking all of his face. He's putting ads in the paper. Is he trying to say that the voters are foolish? That we need to be led? We can't see for ourselves? We can't think for ourselves? We need him to make the decision for us? It is offensive, right? I have not heard him say anything. He's trying to help people through this pandemic stage in any way, shape, or fashion, right? A lot of poor people over there who want help. Mr. Wood helps people. But yet still, I'm not seeing Mr. Wood helping anybody. He's pushing forward an agenda, giving the impression that he wants to run again. Or maybe he's not getting something. I don't know what it is he's trying to do because he's leaving it abstract. He's leaving it open-ended. And it's not right. It's not right. Right? We need help. And if you're getting help and you are not helping, then you're a problem. So why is he trying to be part of the problem if people are suffering? He's even further. Just to see him going around now. And then and in the company, you know, with a former candidate for the same constituency, that beat him. Mm-hmm. So it is not a comfortable feeling for voters when you're seeing these things. And then he's constantly talking, bloviating. And it is saddening, right? And it turns you off from voting. But you know you need. The people needs to be looking for, and you got to do what adult suffrage put there for us to do. Mm-hmm. And that's at least to cast your vote. So you wouldn't turn your back on it. But here, these people, like Wood, it confuses us, right? And people over there, I haven't heard nothing, right? It's just frustrating, not to sound this way, but I saw him, and every minute he's in paper. Not once. He ain't said nothing about helping children with getting tablets or this, you know, wear a mask. Nothing. You know, it's just like a selfish agenda. And what is it for? Right? Mm. You know, we go. I mean, it is not right. Right? Mm. I mean, and then now, when you're in the company, you know, the former attorney general, right? An individual who, because you see the current situation, right? And then that all of a sudden now seems to be your bosom buddy, your pal, right? And you're set on a destructive agenda. It seems like, and for what? What is the promise, right? Mr. Weir, and deserve the same amount of time, the same opportunities as afforded to Mr. Wood and Mr. Buffett. You see him? Mm. He's just gotten into Parliament, right? And I have been the beneficiary as a poor person, right, of his help, right? And I've seen some things he's done. I wouldn't go into the detail. Mm. But it is offensive, right? I mean, look, we're dealing with...
You're a Philippine as well, right?
Of course, sir.
Yeah,
course,
okay. Yeah. I just wanted to be clear that you were speaking as a constituent.
Yes, mm-hmm. Of course. That's why I started with as a voter, right? And I believe it is the right to vote.
You know, I'll say this, sir, that I understand where you're coming from and I share a lot of your concerns, but I also feel that certainly Mr. Weir has a right to fight with the tools that he has available to him. He feels that he's been wronged and he is about to trying to essentially redress those wrongs. And that I get. I get that. I don't know necessarily that he is going to make an impact, but one should not for one moment suggest that he doesn't have the right to try in any way that he can to right the wrongs that he believes need to be righted. Mr. Wood will probably not be a factor in the politics of St. Philip again. That's my feeling.
Not in my book.
Right, not in the book of many, because I think for practical reasons he probably will not come back as a candidate. So does it make sense for then us to, you know, expend a lot of energy concerning ourselves with him?
But when it takes up the front page of the paper, mm-hmm. right, when there are better stories I believe can be mentioned, then yes. Mm-hmm. You understand? I mean, there are other things that are going on in this country and in the world in general that are more relevant, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. To put them up front, sensationalizes it and gives people the impression that it's something meaningful. Mm. You understand? And up to now, I mean, if he has something to say, I would like to hear it. Mm. But if it is truth, bring the truth.
Okay.
Bring the facts. Mm. Right? And I thank you for your time.
All right, sir. And it was good to hear you. And I wish you people of St. Philip well. It's certainly not my favorite parish. I think that you know I'm partial to St. Lucie, but yeah, I wish you guys well. I admire in many ways what St. Philip has done. You have a little republic thing going on there, so that is something to be admired. So wish you all the best.